Energy-efficient and durable houses are more important now than ever before, but today's houses are different from yesterday's houses. Insulation, air conditioning, heating, and forced air delivery systems have all changed the physics of how houses work. Houses didn't used to rot, but too many of them do today. This Green Building Advisor podcast series is excerpted from a two-day class called Building Science Fundamentals with Drs. Joe Stiebrick and John Straub of Building Science Corporation. For information on attending a live class, go to buildingscienceseminars.com. This week, Dr. Joe gives an overview of the building enclosure and outlines what the perfect wall, roof, and slab look like.
What I'd like to do is start off with the fundamental fundamentals. And the first one is, don't do stupid things. What we start with is probably the smart thing. This is the perfect wall, and over the course of 2 days, we're going to talk about why this is the perfect wall. All of the structures to the interior and all of the control functions are to the exterior. And what control functions? Well, there are four principal ones: a rain control layer, an air control layer, a vapor control layer, and a thermal control layer. And they're listed in order of importance. You don't worry about air until you have the rain fixed. You don't worry about vapor until you have both the rain and the air fixed. And the least important is the thermal control layer. You worry about that after you have the other three. Well, that doesn't mean you don't worry about the thermal control layer. It's very important, but it's not as important as keeping the rain out of your building and controlling the airflow across the building enclosure. The easiest to calculate, the easiest to specify and regulate is the thermal control layer, and yet it's the least important of those four. So what do codes and regulations and standards obsess over? The thermal control layer, because we can actually calculate it. We can actually get reasonable numbers. The absolutely most difficult to calculate is the rain control layer. The absolutely most difficult to specify in codes and in standards is the rain control layer. And so, of course, it tends to be ignored, not because it's not important, but because it's very, very difficult to deal with and calculate. It's sort of the irony of human nature. The vapor control layer is easier to specify than the air control layer. So the codes are obsessing over specifying the vapor control layer and yet still ignoring the air control layer. You get the message. The most important factors are often not considered in design and construction and regulation. And the unimportant ones tend to have an overly enthusiastic and detailed amount of specs associated with them. Go back to this wall. So this heavy black line could be the water control layer. It could also be the air control layer. It could also be the vapor control layer. And then the insulation is to the outside of those three control layers. It's blue in color here because Dow pays us. It could be pink it could be cream colored if, you know. Now it could be virtually any insulation system. It could be extruded polystyrene, expanded polystyrene. It could be foil-faced isocyanurate. It could be non-faced isocyanurate. It could be rigid fiberglass. It could be rock wool. Now, I happen to like rock wool because rocks don't burn. Repeat after me. Rocks don't burn. This could be a marketing thing for you. You should write that down. I want you to know that's probably the only thing of value you're going to get from me. But rocks don't burn. Outboard of this is the cladding system. And the cladding system serves three functions. Number one, it provides aesthetics. Number two, it protects the other control layers from exposure to ultraviolet light. And number three, it's a physical protection, mechanical protection against the other control layers. Now, notice I said aesthetics. That's a big deal. I'm 53 years old. I don't know very much, but I know this. People don't take care of ugly things. Think about that. People don't take care of ugly things. If you want a building to last a very long time, if you you want it to be truly sustainable, people are going to want to live in it, work in it, take care of it, and like it. Ugliness is not sustainable. That's why we don't let engineers design buildings. At the end of the day, the building has to be beautiful in order for people to take care of it, and therefore it will be truly sustainable. Now, if it's beautiful and people want to live and work in it, it's going to be around for a very long time. And we've created, in my partner's words, a machine that needs to be fed resources. So the longer it's around, the more resources it's going to consume, and the way that we keep score is basically energy. Energy is about 80% of those resources. That's an arbitrary, pulled-out-of-the-butt value for me. My intuition and experience tells me that 80% of the resources associated with a long-lasting building is the energy consumption of that particular building, much more significant than water, and much more significant than embodied energy. So we've created a machine that needs energy, and the longer it's around, the longer it's going to consume that energy. So you're going to want that building to be ultra-efficient. So you want a beautiful building that lasts a long time, that's ultra-efficient, because we don't want it to consume many resources. And if we're really good, maybe in several generations, and John will be talking about this, that building might actually be generating energy, or it might be made out of materials that are truly sustainable, and John will define in his inimitable way what that means. So don't underestimate the aesthetics part of the cladding function, and then the sunscreen part and the physical protection. Notice the cladding system is completely open. We don't have sealants there. When you use sealants, they're purely aesthetic. They're not functional. We actually want air behind the cladding system. The more air circulation behind the cladding system, the better the cladding system actually works. If the sealants fail, the primary water, air, and vapor and thermal control elements are not affected. That's kind of a fundamental principle. If we take the perfect wall and we lie the perfect wall down, we get the perfect slab. We flip it the other way, we get the perfect roof. This is one of those aha moments where the physics of a wall, roof, and foundation are identical. And the perfect roof would have the structure, control membrane, insulation, and cladding system. Some of the older folks in this room would recognize this as an inverted roof, IRMA, an inverted roof membrane. If you replace the ballast with dirt, grass, and a goat, you would get a green roof. That was a joke. It fell on deaf ears. This is a tough group, John. If you now flip this, you'll get the perfect slab. The perfect slab is the dirt, the stones, insulation, control layer, concrete. So the perfect wall, perfect roof, perfect foundation. Take a section. You add the perfect wall, the perfect roof, the perfect slab. Now comes another one of those aha moments. What do we have to do? We have to connect the perfect roof to the perfect wall to the perfect foundation, and you have the perfect assembly. How these connections are made should be intuitively obvious. That is, you control the water control element of the roof to the water control element of the wall to the water control element of the foundation. Then the air control element of the roof to the air control element of the wall to the air control element of the foundation. The vapor control element of the roof to the wall, to the foundation, and then the thermal control element of the wall, roof, foundation. Pretty fundamental. Most failures occur where roofs are connected to walls. We actually have a word to describe the problems associated with parapets. We call it parapetitis. I made that up. That's another joke, and three of you identified that as humorous. There's hope here. Whenever we do design reviews in our office, you know, try to tell the youngsters in our office to say, look, take a colored pen and sketch or trace the water control element of the building enclosure around the entire perimeter of the structure. And if the pen has to leave the paper, you've identified a discontinuity that needs to be addressed. Then take another colored pen and try to sketch or trace the air control function around the entire perimeter. Then another colored pen, the vapor, and finally the thermal. And any time the pen leaves the paper, you've identified the flaw. It's as simple as that. And we find that the flaws are concentrated at the intersecting elements. What we're talking about here is continuity of the control functions. That's the big deal. Now, I deliberately made these easy where I collapsed three of the four control functions into one line. In the real assemblies, sometimes they're different. Sometimes the air control layer is on the inside and the water control layer is on the outside, right? Then it gets real complicated. And somebody puts a freaking hole in the building, and we call that a window. Now think about life as a window for a minute. A window has to do everything that a wall does and more. It's got to control water, air, vapor, and heat. You want to be able to see through it, and every now and then some lunatic is going to want to be able to do what? Open it. Well, that's the most difficult thing of all. You know, no wonder windows are the most expensive component, because we're asking them to do absolutely the most. Now, we've gotten pretty good at getting windows that actually do all of those things. Isn't that amazing? Windows can actually handle water, air, vapor, heat, be transparent, and operable. Unbelievable. Well, all you got to do is connect the water control element of the window to the water control element of the wall, the air control element of the window to the air control element of the wall, the vapor control element of the window to the vapor control element of the wall, and the thermal control element of the window to the thermal control element of the wall. The reason we've been having so much trouble with window-to-wall connections is because we've been relying on one son of a bitch to do this for the last 30 years, and we have to find him and kill him. And this person's name is By Others. Mr. By Others shows up on all of these specs, and you have to promise that he is not going to be responsible for the window-to-wall connection. Somebody has to be responsible. And all you do on the review side is simply water, water, air, air, vapor, vapor, heat, heat. It's that simple. Now, the window industry doesn't do us any favors. They often don't tell us on their window system what part of that system is actually responsible for the water, the air, the vapor, and the heat. And in the absence of guidance, or in the presence of bad guidance, we always assume that the innermost component of the window is where all four of those functions collapse. So we tend to wrap the window openings and make the connection at the back so that if the window ever fails, that water is all going to run where? To the outside. So it's that simple. That's how you design a building. Water continuity, air continuity, vapor continuity, thermal continuity. I mean, it can't be that easy. Well, the answer is yes, it is.